Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
This is Full Change with Tom Laidlaw.
So how was your weekend, Tom? What did you do?
Ooh, one of the best weekends I've done in 4 years in a row. One of the best weekends of the year for me. Go up to Vestal, New York, this fantastic family, the Pierce family, the husband and wife and four kids. He's a former player at Cornell, Larry Pierce, and now he is in the demolition business. So they go to buildings and tear them down. They save a lot of stuff. So in their farm or on their farm, they built a outdoor rink, full size, chiller, the whole bit. And they recently built a big, it's a big cabin almost, but it's balcony, so you can sit and watch the games. You have food there. And this wonderful woman, Jen O'Brien, runs the American Special Hockey Association. So they have a tournament there, this outdoor rink for kids with special, not just kids. Needs.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
And it's really cool. They rank them. They have, like, you know, based on their skill or their mental or physical health, they're ranking like A's, B's, C's.
So they make it fair.
Yeah. So the A's play the A's. But these kids are unbelievable. We talked about it before that. They're just the most honest people in the world. If they like you, they'll love you. If they, right. They're so fed, it's okay, well, you play in the NHL. Yeah, they can care less. Some of the kids get excited about the NHL and everything. Most of the kids, they can care less. They're having such a blast. And it's all, again, the Pierce family does not charge anything for the rink. It's
beautiful. That's great.
Yeah, they have, so there's one big house down the hill kind of where the kids can get dressed. And then they've got a tractor with a wagon. They load the kids on the wagon.
Oh, cool. Hay ride?
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, really, really cool. So I hang out and go on the bench there and have some fun. So again, it's the fourth year I've been there, so I know a lot of the same people are going.
So you're seeing the same kids year after year?
And yeah.
Yeah.
Some father sent me a note. Joseph Ruggiero, yes. He coaches special needs team. He just had a heart attack recently, so he cannot be there. But his son was there. I didn't realize his son was there, but he sent me a note today on Facebook Messenger saying how great it was. And you know, you know that you're helping these kids so much, you know, just even in a small way. So it's yeah, a lot of fun. It is funny because, you know, obviously when I played, I had hair. So some of the dads I go up and introduce myself, I'm Tom Laidlaw. Like, oh my God, you're Tom Laidlaw. Because they didn't recognize me with no hair anymore.
Well, I think it's best. You put this picture up a long time ago. It was you, Stefan Matteau, Brian Mull, and Adam Graves. Before you guys together, your head's buzzed, which is awesome.
Oh, God. So it's funny because when we're all together, you can see that we don't look exactly the same. But if we're seen separately, we're always getting confused for somebody else, Brian Mull, Mullen. And it's funny because when we go to an event, I know now when somebody thinks that I'm, especially Adam Graves. Because they get way too excited for Tom Laidlaw, right? They're on.
Right.
You can tell they're nervous and everything. And I'm going, who do you think I am? You're Adam. I go, no, I'm Tom Laidlaw. And they're going to walk away like, oh, God, it's just Laidlaw.
Oh, really?
And it's funny.
Yeah. Kids are very, very brutally honest. Not just kids. So you were skating with my son's organization at the Ranger practice they have once a year. Yep. And after the practice, Coach Andy's son, Connor Lane, he's like, Andy was like, this is an NHL player. And he goes, I've met plenty of NHL players before. And Andy shakes his head. He's like, no, he hasn't. Like, he's very trying to be very casual about it. You know, as a 17.
Yeah, he wanted to be cool. Yeah, right. It's very good.
He's like, no.
But the thing is, too, I think sometimes people feel like it's embarrassing for me. But it's really funny. It happens so much that it's like the other ones too. Like you see what go to an event and if they know what Adam Graves is going to be there, and they'll be pointing at Adam. I can't tell he's saying that's Adam Graves. Is Adam Graves? And Adam walks in and turns around, looks at me. Oh God, it's just Laidlaw. The best one, I think the best one, we were skating, I think season ticket holders at Madison Square Garden. And this guy was out in the ice with his girlfriend, and he was really excited. And he's getting like 10 pictures taken with me and everything. And then he turns to his girlfriend and he goes, can you take a picture of Mark and I? They thought I was Mark Messier. And I felt bad for him because I had to go and say, listen, I'm Mark Messier.
But my number is up there in the rafters.
That's right, yeah. And I think then they feel bad that I'm best. And I think it's hilarious, really. So it does happen quite a bit. Yeah.
And I just want to go back to what that skate you had with us. It was funny because now I'm kind of like running all the mites there and the practice. And I'm like, all right, so I'm trying to make it comfortable for you. I'm like, all right, Tom, so we'll have the coaches. And you go, I've done this before. And I was like, yeah, he probably has.
I know. You were being very nice. You were trying to make sure it ran smoothly.
But it was perfect. And you were great with the kids, getting in there, being goofy. And yeah, a lot of fun. You signed your autographs. And
You guys, I've said this to you before, that coaching group, you guys did a fantastic job. You were teaching enough.
Thanks.
But at the same time, you know, it's a nice session. The kids have been in school all day long. You can't, like, you overcoach them. It's
just not going to go anywhere. So no. You want it to be fun. That's like the core of it. It's got to be fun. Yeah. And then you want to learn a little bit here and there.
Yeah, exactly.
That's and we said at the beginning of the season, our goal, just let's let them just skate. They just have to skate like crazy because that's what the game is at this age. And, you know, the kids have fun. They love it. The parents are happy. So it's been a fun year. And you capped it off. We have one more game, one more weekend left, and they're done, which is crazy. And then then I'll be more up to squirts. They had just played the Prudential Center. They had a game there, which was a lot of fun for the kids. And it's been a great experience. But highlight was Tom Laidlaw coming to the practice.
That was Brian Mullet.
No, it was last year, Brian Mullet game.
That's right, yeah.
This year with Tom Laidlaw, with the world's heaviest stick. So
that's right too. I forget that I've got it. So I've got a wooden stick for people that want to know. Nobody has even seen a wooden stick. Most of these kids. So especially with the bigger kids, they'll always want to grab it and try shooting bucks with it.
So I think I made the picture. So Laidlaw goes out there. He comes on the rink, no bucket, with his head. He's got this giant 50-30 coffee Sherwood stick, and you got Brandon Dubinsky's gloves on with the huge padding that Tortorella put in. So you're like. You're some kind of throwback.
I know. My skates are like 30 years old, too. So, yeah.
And the kids don't mind. You gave a nice little speech at the beginning. And, you know, your timing was perfect because those 7, 8-year-olds and 6-year-olds were there. Their attention span is about a minute and a half. So they're like, what are we doing here?
It's like 10 seconds. Like, you look them in the eyes, you can tell they're like, they're good kids. It's just like, okay, I've been in school all day long and somebody's talking to me. Now this other guy's here with a big head.
They're like, well, let's just move. Yeah, it was cool, though. It was good to have you out there. And, today we have a good show coming up. We're going to have a person you don't know, and I don't think you crossed paths with, but we have a Stanley Cup champion, New Jersey Devil, and lots of other teams. He bounced around a little bit. But we're going to have a speedster, Tom Chorsky, on the show today. Should be good show.
I love the shows too, where I don't know the guys at all and I learn about them. You know, it still comes out okay when you know the guys, but you know what their story is. Him, I know nothing about him, so it's.
So this should be interesting.
Wasn't he the first guy to win Mr. Minnesota or Mr. Hockey?
Yes, he was. He was the inaugural recipient of the Minnesota, which is, for people don't know, it's a huge award. It's the best hockey player in Minnesota, best high school hockey player. And that's a huge, that's a different world unto itself. Yeah. Ryan McDonough's won that award, several, maybe TJ Oshie's won it, I'm not sure, but it's like a big deal. And he was the first one to get it. So we'll hear his story about that.
Very cool. Good job. Good get by you there, Mr. Smith.
I think working hard. Here we go. Keep grinding. Tom Chorsky. Good morning, Tom. We have an exciting guest on today. We have a former first-round pick. We have the first ever Mr. Minnesota for high school hockey. We have a Stanley Cup champion, and we have someone who was the last cut from the 1988 Olympic team, and we'll hear about that story because you were also a cut from an Olympic team, and you guys can talk about that as well. But today we have Tom Chorsky, former Stanley Cup champion with the New Jersey Devils.
This is going to be the first time I've had this. Tom Laidlaw, Tom Chorsky, and Tom Smith. Very good. What Olympic team did you try out for? What year?
88.
88.
It was in Calgary.
Okay. And who was coaching then?
Yep. The head coach then was Dave Peterson.
Okay.
Kind of jumped in there just, I don't know who was, Lou Vero was before him. Dave Peterson actually coached at the high school I went to. So I never played for him in high school. He left the high school and went to join the USA hockey program, but I was playing for the Minnesota Gophers at the time, took a year leave to travel around with the national team, they called it, and then they had to, you know, they cut down, and by the end of the season, I was the last one to let go. So,
is that right? How'd that feel?
You know, it felt shitty because it was on my bucket list of things, you know, to do. I was pretty impressionable age, 13, when the U.S. won the gold medal. A lot of Minnesotans on that team, a lot of Minnesota Gophers on that team. So I was really into making that team, and I should have, but I struggled. I started slumping and then was gripping my stick, and just at the right time, I stressed out, and I saw it coming. I knew I was going to be the guy, kind of. But still, you know, but it, in the end, it, you know, it motivated me, and I went back to school for one more year, and despite getting injured, I had a really good season, and then was on my way to Montreal.
Wow. And a first round draft pick from Montreal. How'd that feel too? Like, you go from Minnesota where hockey's such a big thing, and then you go to Montreal as a first round draft pick. A little pressure there.
Yeah, you nailed that. I didn't even know at the time what I was getting into per se. I was predicted, I think I was NHL scouting was, I was like a early second round pick. And the draft that year was in Montreal. I didn't go to the draft, you know, whether it wasn't a thing at the time, the draft was in Montreal, or maybe my parents, we didn't have tons of money, and it just was like, okay, well, draft is coming up on Saturday. I'll hang around the house. I think I was mowing the lawn at one point, and then the phone rang, and actually Serge Savard was the GM, but a reporter got to me first. I don't know how they had my number, but a reporter called and said, you've just been picked. I was 16th. They had two picks that year. They had one at number 8 and 16, and they took me at 16. So I was shocked that I went that high. And then to Montreal, you know, I knew they were, a historic organization, and at the time, and still have the most Stanley Cups, right? So, yeah, I was a little taken back, but then when you get there, it's pretty intimidating. I was American, college kid, pretty green. I saw just a couple minutes of you on Suds with Luds. So Ludsy was there.
Ah, that's right.
Chris Chelios, you know, Guy Carboneau, Skrudland, Mike McPhee were the veterans, Ryan Walter. And then on the younger side was me and Shane Corson and Mike Keane and Brent Gilchrist and Russ Cortinal, guys like that. So it was fun, but I was on pins and needles the whole time, frankly.
Yeah, no kidding. I can imagine anybody going in Montreal, especially being a Minnesota kid too. Now, was Larry Robinson still there? Or is he gone by then?
He was gone by then. He was. Okay. I think he was probably in L.A. by then.
Yep. Yeah. With me, yeah. I got to play with him. Screw it. That was a big thing for me. I loved him. He was fantastic as a person, as a player.
Yeah, he was our assistant in '95 with the Devils when we won the Cup.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Good guy, isn't he? He's like a little kid. Like, I mean, not in a good way. He just loves life and is always having fun. Yeah.
Yeah. As a legend, you know, as a legendary Hall of Fame guy with an amazing, you know, resume, just kind of down to earth and easygoing and genuine and friendly and kind and all that.
Is that true? Yeah. It's just, I guess you have this different picture. You look at him as an imposing figure. You can do it all out in the ice, but man, he's just a sweetheart.
Yeah. I was going to say, when he did drop the gloves, he was pretty, pretty fierce.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally, yeah. What city did you grow up in Minnesota?
Minneapolis.
Oh, you were, okay.
Yep.
You know, we went in to play the Gophers my senior year of college in Northern Michigan. We were ranked number one in the country, and we won the CCHA. We had to go in there and play the Gophers. But luckily for us, a lot of those guys that were on the 80 Olympic team were not there, so we ended up winning the game. But they were all there. We would have some trouble, I think.
Well, timing is everything.
Yes, it was, yeah. Like, Neil Broughton wasn't there. His brother was there.
Mike Ramsey was gone.
Yeah.
The goalie, Janisak, was pretty good. Yeah. Probably, maybe even Kristoff and McClanahan.
Yeah, McClanahan for sure. Yep. Yeah, definitely. Oh, my God. Yeah, we just won by one goal. It was 4-3. And actually, they shot a puck through the net, through our net. Steve Weeks was a goaltender, but they didn't get it because they couldn't find the hole in the net. So we won by one goal. That was it.
I just wonder who shot the puck. I don't know.
It's Paul Broughton. I'm pretty sure it's Paul Broughton.
It would have been Aaron Broughton. I played with Paul. Yep. Okay. Years later, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And I was the captain of the team, too. I ran over to the referee and said, show me the hole. And they couldn't find the hole.
Oh, yeah. Good stuff.
So did you start off being a good player right away when you first started as a kid?
Yeah, pretty much. I lived right near a lake that, they put a warming shack right there. And it was, I could probably 100 yards from my house. And I didn't have any brothers and had a younger sister, and my mom would want me out of the house, and I just fell in love with it right away. and spent tons and tons of time there. I grew up in Minneapolis, where there was a lot of hockey. You know, I started off in like outdoor park board leagues, playing outside at parks, and then I moved indoors. This would be traveling hockey when I was a peewee. But you know, the competition wasn't that high in Minneapolis, so I stood out. I was always the best player at my age level playing in, you know, inner city hockey. But we had a really thriving hockey, I guess, league and conference in Minneapolis at the high school level, but it wasn't super deep the way it would have been in parts of Canada and right. things like that. But or the suburbs, maybe even the suburbs of Minneapolis was stronger. So I kind of came out of a weaker, you know, weaker competition, which set me back a little bit. When I got to college, I jumped right into the U and WCHA hockey, and I really wasn't ready for that. So I had to set back my freshman year. Was tough. I struggled. And then, you know, by my sophomore year, I figured it out. And I got cut my junior year from the Olympic team, you know. So I had all these ups and downs. And I get to Montreal, and again, I was a little intimidated. Pat Burns didn't love me as a, like you said, as an American college kid. But he kind of eventually had to play me because I was a first-round draft pick, and I'm sure some pressure on him to keep me in the lineup. But, you know, and then I got traded to New Jersey, and then that's where things really kind of started to take off for me. Got a chance to play a little bit more relaxed, you know, situation. Or anyway, they were giving me a chance, right? They traded for me. Tom McVie was our coach that first year. I don't know if you ever crossed Tommy McVie, but
I did not. I heard a lot of stories about him, though, yeah.
Oh man, you would have got a kick out of that guy.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, hilarious coach. Old school as old school gets.
Yeah, and Lou Lamoriello was GM at that point.
Lou was the GM. Yep, and my second year was Herb Brooks. That was actually a bit of a rough patch for me too. He really challenged me. First day of practice, he comes up to me, and I'm all excited, right? I got Herb Brooks as a coach. I'm from Minnesota. I can skate like, you know, the wind, or, you know, and I'm ready to do whatever he wants. You know, he wants to go east west. I'll play east west. It's going to be awesome. Sure. All the rest of the guys are like east west. I go north south. That's just let me do my job. Yeah. But he skated right up to me, and he looked at me and he said, "I've been watching you my whole life, and you're going to have to play a hell of a lot better if you think you're going to play for me."
Oh, and that's the first thing he said to you?
Yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah. And he had actually been, he had presented me the Mr. Hockey Award that that Tom mentioned here when I was in high school, which was pretty cool, right? That was another. Yeah. They just invented this award as the best high school hockey player in Minnesota, and I was the first recipient. And they
had heard. Wow, that's cool. Wow, that's very cool.
Was a pretty cool thing. But yeah, he did one of his Herb Brooks deals on me, and I was like, oh boy, and he challenged me, which was fine. Yeah. It just took me a while to you know, figure it out and deal with it. After 1 year, I think he probably didn't see eye to eye with Lou you know, what happened, but he resigned. And then Jacques Lemaire and Larry Robinson showed up. And that's when all of a sudden Lou was able to get Scott Stevens from St. Louis, and Randy McKay came in from Detroit for Crowder. There was all these awards for the teams were signing away guys from the Devils, right. And somehow Lou just started stacking these assets that were, you know, now I don't want to say they were way better than the guys that left, but they were really good pieces.
Yeah, I remember that time, right, when Lou's putting that team together. Man, they were good. As Jacques Lemaire, how'd you like him as a coach?
Loved him. He played me the most. He slotted me, even though I kind of grew up obviously as an offensive guy. I wasn't producing that way at the NHL level, so he kind of slotted me. He liked having a checking line, a checking unit. Yep. And so he slotted me in with Bobby Carpenter, who, you know, was kind of past his offensive prime, but smart, could win faceoffs. And so he and I would play together most of the time, and we were penalty killers, and we usually played against the other team's top line. With our other winger was either Claude Lemieux, John McClain, or Stéphane Richer sometimes, and so it just worked out great. So our teammates at first hated it because we would go out all the time against, you know, Gretzky, yeah. Messier, Sakic, sure. Neuwendijk, you know, Yzerman. And they were like, well, these guys get to play all the time. Why, you know, but then we started winning consistently and everyone kind of found their role or their little niche and they got comfortable with it. And then we were kind of a machine.
Yeah. No kidding. Yeah. It was Marty Brodeur then? He was there.
Yep. Right? Marty had come in, not right when I got there in 91, 92. I think he came in, played. I ran into him recently and looked up his stuff, his career. So he came up for a couple games, maybe even when he was in junior. Then he played 1 year in the American League, I think in 92, 93. And then he showed up as a rookie in 93, 94. And we went to the Eastern Conference Finals that year, lost to the Rangers in double overtime. It was Mateau.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right, yes.
Well, let's focus on a little, because that's like one of the greatest series in New York hockey history. I mean, that was incredible. How was it to be a part of that? You're on the losing end, unfortunately, but, well, fortunately for Ranger fans or Tom and all of us. But
How
was it to be a part of that incredible, electric, exciting series?
Yeah, it was. I get chills kind of thinking about it, and the NHL Network still plays it as one of the greatest series, and they call it the tunnel series because – at the time, the Meadowlands, Brendan Byrne Arena is only like 5 or 3 miles or some direct line right to Madison Square Garden. The year before, we had some good battles because we were starting to be a contender, and the Rangers obviously were the Rangers. They're the biggest team in the metro area there, pretty much, besides the Yankees. But it was intense. They had a hatred for Claude Lemieux.
Everybody
hated him. Even some of his teammates. He was actually great. He was great as a teammate. He's one of those teammates, you might recognize these kind of guys that you love him as a teammate. But even as teammates, away from the rink, they were great. Go to dinner, whatever, hang out. They're funny in the locker room, and they get in the ice and they turn into like this kind of cocky, arrogant guy, and which was fine. It's just kind of funny.
Yeah,
you just kind of look at him and go, wow, this guy just can turn it into a different character. So back to that series, it was great. It was awesome. Yeah. It was intense. Both sides were getting into it, and the Ranger fans would come over and fill our building at the time, probably a little bit more. This was in 93, 94. By 94, 95, our fans were coming out and filling the building. But before that, Ranger fans, they were all over New Jersey because they grew up, they grew up supporting the Rangers. I met all kinds of fans. They'd be like, hey, no offense, but I grew up a Ranger fan, so I'm a Ranger fan. And you're like, I get it. But it was amazing. It went double overtime, 7 games. Messier during that series, he sort of didn't mean to, but he called a victory, right? We had him down. I think we had him down 3-1, and he guaranteed a victory, supposedly. And then he had a hat trick in that game. It was just one more element to that saga of a series.
So, Tom, when you guys see that splash all over the New York Post and Daily News, it says, we will win tonight. What are you guys thinking in the locker room at that point?
Well, at that point, I think, I don't remember us being like seething or anything. We were like, oh, that's interesting. We'll see. I mean, I think we tried to still respect those guys. And, Jacques was really pretty good about trying to keep everyone on a level keel, because that's kind of how he was. So I don't really remember it being like, whiteboard material or chalkboard material, whatever you call that, putting it up and putting a big red circle around it. But it just kind of, and it was probably on the morning of the game, it was there. And so you're kind of just going about your business. But before you know it, you're in the game. And it was more of a thing. It seems like it was more of a thing after the game that he had predicted it than before. There wasn't too much hype about it before, I don't think. I could be wrong, but that was a long time ago.
Yeah, I don't think you guys would have needed anything, right? You had enough of a veteran team there. And besides, it was Mark Messier saying it too, right? So it's almost like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to like, you don't just completely call bullshit on him like that. Like he's
done it.
He's legit.
Yeah. You're right. And then he goes and scores a hat trick too, right? All the times to do it.
Yeah. So what was an empty netter though? So come on.
There you go. You're right.
And then the next year, they used that motivation, like you mentioned earlier, from getting cut. Next year, you guys ran through the playoffs, and you ran through the Red Wings. You swept them and won the Stanley Cup, which was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's, you know, it was the lockout year, so it was a little bit shortened. But yeah, but by the time we reconvened at, you know, right after Christmas time, we were kind of back on a mission from the year before. We had gotten so close the year before, and it took us a little while, you know, but because I don't know, for whatever reason, you know, we didn't have a great regular season. There's half of a season, but towards the end, we really were able to dial it in. And yeah, we set a record at that time for, we were 16-1 on the road. So we had to start all our series on the road, and we ended up going 16-1, I think, which was a record at the time. I think it's been tied or broken maybe, but, yeah, we went on a roll, and it really felt like we just had a system, or we were like, I don't know, we were all on the same page. It was a formula, if you will. And we just would get into the game and get, you know, they say, you know, teams got to get to their game or whatever and find their game. Well, they dropped the puck and we would kind of plug in and do the same thing game after game. And if it, you know, there were games when we lost, but Jacques would assure us that we played the right way, or we would make a little adjustment on what we had to do, and we'd show up the next game, and sure enough, we'd win that game and we were back on track. So yeah, that's what you kind of have to do to win a cup, right? You gotta have it all buttoned up and get on the same page and go on a roll.
Marty Brodeur too. What's he got going, man? He's just one of those weird guys, but like most goalies are really uptight. You can't talk to or nothing. He was just, nothing bothered him, right?
No, he's pretty normal guy. Yeah. You know, I played with Patrick Watt in Montreal too. And, he wasn't super quirky, but more quirky than Marty, yeah. You know, a little bit more of a unique personality. Marty was kind of just a really normal personality, but
yeah,
man, what a goalie he was. And, you know, he kind of created his own style of play. You know, he wasn't just a butterfly goalie. It was before butterfly goalies really existed, but actually we're old enough to remember when goalies just were stand-up goalies, and you could just shoot it past their feet and they would go in and they were like, oh, good shot, you know. But yeah. Marty had this thing where he would kind of morph one leg, one pad under the other, but folding them in, and he would go paddle down and he'd get his catching glove and elbow up, you know, and if you're coming from an angle, he just closed all the openings.
Right.
You know, was one thing I remember. Another thing, he would really control his rebounds, you know, like he had awareness that when the puck was coming at him on a shot, if there really wasn't someone crashing the net and he had a defenseman right there, he would, instead of like trapping it or deflecting it away from that guy, he could almost steer it and just have it drop dead right next to that defenseman. And then we'd break out and on we'd go. Right. And he was really good at playing the puck, hence the trapezoid thing, right? Where he could play the puck. So they invented that against him. But yeah, he was an incredible, almost like an innovator of the position.
And so how many years did you have in New Jersey then?
Oh, four. Only four of my 11, I guess, but it was good four.
Yeah, no kidding. So one cup there, right?
Yes.
Yeah, good. So how many years did you go back to Montreal? How long were you there?
Montreal, my first year I made the team out of camp, and then there were some injuries, though, and I really wasn't playing much, and I'm sure the thought process was that I needed, you know, some seasoning in the minors, so... I played like 15 games in Montreal, you know, a month and a half or whatever. And then these injuries came back and I moved down to the fourth line, wasn't playing much, and it really wasn't a spot for me. So I went down and spent the rest of the year in Sherbrooke and got my American League experiences, which was interesting. And it was good. It was good for me to go through that. And then the next year I was up the whole year. And the following year, you know, I knew I hadn't played much. Didn't feel like Bernsey really wanted me there, so I asked for a trade. And
oh, you did? Yeah.
Yeah, they traded me and Richet for...
Did you go yourself?
I don't know if I asked or if I had an agent ask. I don't remember. Right. I think probably my agent asked. And Serge seemed to accommodate it pretty quick, but...
Right.
But they got Kirk Muller from the Devils, so they were happy. And Lou, you know, Lou was pissed off at Kirk because I think he was holding out or something. You know, he had a contract holdout, and Lou didn't like anyone who did that. So, He made the trade and it worked out. You know, then they won a cup with Kirk, and then we won a cup like a year, 2 years later. So I don't know. It worked out for everyone.
Sure. That is the thing with Lou, right? If you're part of his family and you treat him like family and you're treated like family, then you're great. But if you do something like what Kirk Muller did holding out, oh yeah, you're like that.
Yeah, he did not like that at all. He's loyal. He comes from that background of, you know, Providence, Rhode Island, of, you know, you be loyal to me, I'll be loyal to you. But if you cross me, we're gonna have some problems.
Yeah. I heard that so many times from people too, the guys he'd had there forever, they work in the organization after, and he takes care of people. But yeah, it's Lou's way. There's no other way. You do it.
Yeah, and his way is pretty good. You know, there's a lot, it's mostly good, all of his sort of his philosophies and theories and what he does, and he's so disciplined in everything he does, and he's consistent, you know. Like, yeah. Hard to argue with, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. So when you get traded from Jersey, what happened there? Did you see that trade coming, or?
From Jersey to Ottawa?
Yes.
No, I didn't really see that one coming. We had just won the cup. But, you know, maybe I saw it a little bit. I had a little bit of concerns because I could tell that, you know, we had some young and up-and-coming players. I was going to be 28, 29. And, you know, we had guys like Rolston and Billy Guerin. Sergey Breland was a young kid that was showing, you know, like pretty nifty little player. And so, you know, it was during training camp. And then I did have a little mouse whisper to me that something was in the works. And so the next day I found out I was headed to Ottawa. It was early, kind of early in there. You know, tenure. So that was, I went from the, you know, Stanley Cup champions to, I think, the worst team in the league. So it was a bit of a shock, but, you know, Pierre McGuire was on the staff there. And I see Pierre these days. Our sons play together at Colgate. So we have boys that are playing at Colgate together. And Pierre says, oh, we really needed you. We wanted you. And you were a big piece of helping kind of get things turned around. So I feel good about it these days anyway.
Yeah, it's got to be hard, though. You go from the best-run organization probably in the league at that time, winning the Stanley Cup, and Ottawa's reputation, unfortunately, was not very good at that time. They drafted Alexander Daigh, right? Didn't they draft him first overall?
Yeah, that Daigh, who was a great personality and a nice kid. And, you know, doesn't ask for being put in that position.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was hard, really hard on him. But he kept his, for a guy that was, you know, put in the spotlight of Canada and NHL and, you know, a big, you know, considered I don't know about a failure or a bust, but it was tough. But he was fun to be around, high, good, positive spirited kid, young, good looking kid, kind of acted like, yeah, I know, but nothing's going to stand in my way. Then the other one was Alexei Yashin, another sort of enigma of a guy that, you know, they give him the captaincy, I think. Or no, we had Randy Cunningworth as our captain there. I'm thinking in New York Islanders. But anyway, you know, a young kid, and no one could get to him and teach him, show him how to be a little more humble and the way to do things at that time. Maybe things have changed in the NHL now, but at that time there was just kind of some prices to pay and things like that. And so there was all these different elements that were also working against the organization at that time. Originally that first year, we hadn't moved out to Kanata yet. We were still downtown in the old, whatever they called that building in downtown, but it was pretty old. Yeah. So, you know, there was just a bunch of things that had to happen, and they've happened since then. Right. And then Ottawa had a nice run there when they were, you know, when they were going to cups and things like that.
Didn't they put Daigh in a dress for some advertisement or something?
I think it was a nursing outfit.
That's what it was. I remember.
Yeah, which these days probably would be a complete no-no, right? That would be considered completely offensive.
Yeah.
To put him in one of those nurses' outfits with like the paper hat and you know, he looked, you know, like the stereotypical nurse outfit, you know, for a woman or whatever, female. And that didn't help.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. and you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So you're a TV star. You're on Survivor for a few episodes. But Tom Chorsky also was on David Letterman's show with the Stanley Cup, which is pretty cool.
Very cool. Nice. Good job.
You want to tell us about that?
That was cool. Yeah, you know, you win the cup and the days following, I think there's a lot of people, right, that are pulling at the team on, hey, do this. Can you come here? Can you do that? And then we got a call like, hey, the Letterman show called and they want to know if you want to go on. And like six or seven of us raised our hand. Some guys weren't interested in doing it, I guess, or I don't know. I raised my hand and they brought us in and, you know, put us in the green room. They gave us like, well, at the time, Letterman was into cigars too. So I don't know. They gave us cigars and we probably still had, you know, we dragged a cooler of beer in there. And I remember Diane Lane was the guest, which was pretty cool.
Nice. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. We were going up to go on the show and she had just done her segment and was coming down. And so we like crossed paths in the stairway or something. It was like, whoa, hey.
Yeah. Did she say hello to you?
No, she did not. No. She probably thought, who are these?
She's probably nervous.
Who are these Neanderthals?
Yeah.
But we came out and our first trip out was to, I think, we brought the top 10 out in the cup. So
okay.
We came out, he announced us, you know, and that was kind of cool. And he reached in and took the top 10 out of the cup. And then he thought it went so well, or he thought it was good, and the crowd gave us a round of applause that we got off stage and we were waiting for a minute and he said, hey, he wants you to come back out again.
Oh,
so after a commercial break, they put coffee in the cup and we came back out and filled up his coffee cup with coffee or something.
Oh, there you go. Nice. That's cool.
Your buddy, Rob Arnett, his producer, has been on this show.
Yeah. Right.
Huge hockey fan. And he's been on this show with Tom. He's a huge hockey fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's something to say. You've been on the Letterman show, I guess.
Yeah, good. How was David Letterman? He's a good guy.
You know, we didn't interact with him too much. He was, you know, he was in the middle of his show doing his business.
Right.
But what happened, another cool thing was that we stuck around after. We went back to the green room. We were like, well, you know, we got beers and cigars here, so why not? Yeah. And so we continued to party down there for a while. And by the time we got done, we came out and the show was over. Everyone was gone. And so we went back on the set and we all sat in the chairs and sat at the desk and took pictures. And
that's cool.
So we've got these photos of us, you know, on the set too. And no one was even there, I think. So.
Oh, that's funny. And they tape that during the day, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. It tapes at like five in the afternoon, something like that.
That's classic hockey players right there. Got the cooler beer on the David Letterman show. That's cool.
Yeah, you remember what it was like. I saw you played with the Rangers during the freaking the Duguay days and Jordache jeans and all that part of stuff. Did you play with Doug Solomon?
Yes, a little bit. Yes, I did. Yeah.
So yeah. Doug was the assistant coach when I got there. I think my first year with Robbie Fatorik. Was another coach.
He's one of my all-time favorite people right there, Robbie Vittori. Love him.
Robbie? Yeah, he was great. He was like, he was an assistant for me and always, you know, positive, pumping my tires and, you know, or at least being positive and encouraging stuff. He did a great job being assistant.
Yeah. He was coaching us in LA when Wayne Gretzky got traded there. And those
I
admire both those guys, but they are totally opposite each other, right? Robbie is totally Mr. Discipline, 45-second shifts. You're going to do it this way. You know, and Wayne's out there staying for 3 minutes. They didn't. You know what's funny? I think they really liked each other, but they just, it was a whole different world. Like Wayne just couldn't survive under that system that Robbie had. And Rob, and I talked to Rob about it too, because I played with him in New York, and then he coached out in LA. And he said, Tom, I said, I have to do it my way. I'm going to get fired. Every coach gets fired at some point. You might as well do coach the way you want to coach. That's the way he lived his life too.
I think a lot of coaches were that way. They're like, hey, if I'm going to go down, I'm going down playing my way or my guys. Yeah. And I mean, which is understandable, right? As a man, you kind of stick to your convictions. And
right. Robbie Fattori. And then so he was an assistant coach with you?
In New Jersey. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things, so we would have that in common. One of the things Robbie had, which was pretty cool, I wish I would have done it, but he kept a notebook. I don't know if you ever saw it, but he kept notebooks. And every time he played or coached a new player, played with a player, a teammate, and or coached one, he would have you sign this notebook.
Wow.
And he must have had, you know, I don't know how many filled up, 3 or 4 or 5 or whatever.
Yeah.
But he's got somewhere, he's got notebooks with every player that he's ever crossed paths with.
I did not know that. You know, he was funny too. Like a lot of coaches think, like Ted Seder, I think, had this thing where he'd want to play in like 4-game segments. So he started the 4-game segment. He said, okay, how many games should we win out of the 4 games? And Robbie would go, 4. And every time he'd be 4, the answer's 4. Because Robbie's, yeah, we're going to win every game. I'm not going to like win just 3 games. I want to win all 4 games. And the coach is trying to go, okay, but let's be realistic. You know, Robbie get that red face going, nope, 4. That's it. It's just hilarious.
High energy, intense.
Yeah.
You know, it reminds me of a story when Jacques came to New Jersey. You know, sometimes in your contract, you'd have these incentive bonuses, right? So if you scored 20 goals, you got a bonus or plus minus, you know, all these individual bonuses. And he came in and told Lou to, I don't know if he was able to, like, you know, negate all the individual ones, but what he did was he implemented these team ones that would, you almost cared more about the team ones than the individual ones because they were worth more. Sure. So he said, all right, from now on, when we win 3 games in a row, everyone gets $500.
Oh.
And if you win four in a row, you get $1,000. It went up 500 increments. You got $1,000 if you got a shutout.
Okay.
So that year, you know, we got Marty Brodeur in that, and we got into games, and you know, if we had a shutout after 2 periods, we were locking that shit down. Like we And, you know, the mistake was, though, we told, you know, if you told your wife that you got $1,000 for a shutout, it was, you were going out for steak and lobster that night. So we went on, like, in the first 7 games, I think we had, like, 3 shutouts, and we won 4 in a row out of the gate, and then we lost one, then we won, you know, another 2 or 3. Right. And so we, right out of the gate, we had a nice little bonus check.
Good. And Robbie put that in place?
That was Jacques Lemaire.
Jacques Lemaire, okay. Okay, so how many, you had 4 years in New Jersey, went to Ottawa. How long were you in Ottawa?
2 years there. Then I was, by the end of it, I was, Rick Bonus was there. And then Rick got fired, went to the Islanders, and I became expendable from Ottawa. So Rick grabbed me, and I went to the Islanders for a year with him. And then he got fired there, and Milbury was in charge. And I remember I had a meeting with the coaches, including Milbury, and I must have said something that was offensive or, you know, whatever. He didn't like it. You know, I just said, yeah, you know, I think I was a veteran at that point. And I said, here's what I think, you know, needs to happen or whatever. And next day he traded me.
He's the biggest jerk I've ever seen in that stock, I gotta tell you.
Yeah, thank you. and it was just like, it was kind of like that scene in Moneyball or whatever. Like, yeah. We went on the road. We're in St. Louis. He comes storming in like he sometimes did. And I was sitting there near his office. And he goes, hey, Chorsky, come here. And whatever, I walk in his office. We're getting ready for a morning skate. He's like, I just traded you to the Capitals. He said, I don't know when you played for Ron Wilson, but he wants you. So you're on your way to Washington. So I went to Washington.
When I was in the agent business, I had Brian Berard as client there. And, you know, Brian has been a first.
Brian was there when I was there.
Yep. So he went to Washington. How long?
He was only 1 year. And I ended up having, he dismantled that Islanders team pretty well over the years. But
look at the guys he traded away, like Zdeno Chara, Roberto Luongo, all these guys.
Yeah. I mean, Todd Bertuzzi ended up being quite a player.
Yep.
Brian McCabe was a nice little player. Then I went to Washington. I ended up having surgery, that abdominal surgery. And that was kind of the beginning of my demise. Like, this guy carved me open and used me like he's some new technique, and I didn't, you know, I signed off on it or something. And so that ended up really being kind of a bad decision. I probably should have rehabbed without surgery. And I went the whole year kind of on the bench or in the, you know, on the IR. I got back just in time down the stretch, and Capitals weren't going to make the playoffs. It's funny, they had gone to the Cup the year before, and then the next year they weren't going to make the playoffs. And George McPhee was the GM, and he was great. You know, he was like, look, your contract's expiring. Do you want to get traded? I was like, yeah, if you can trade me, you know, to a playoff contender, maybe I can extend my season and it'll be helpful for me to sign next year. And so he finally found a spot. There wasn't a lot of takers. There wasn't, you know, I was hadn't played. I was older, but he found Calgary took me. So I went to Calgary at the trade deadline, and played for Brian Sutter. That was an interesting deal too. And I was just kind of coming back. I wasn't in good shape. You know, that was a struggle too, but so that wasn't a very successful stop, but still a stop on my career. And then the last year, Pittsburgh signed me in 99-2000, and ironically or coincidentally, Herb Brooks became the coach after they fired Kevin Constantine, and Herb came in, and opposite of what he said to me years before in New Jersey, he said, "You haven't been given a good enough chance. I'm going to give you a chance." You know, this is years and years later, six, seven years later, I got a Cup. I played, you know, probably 575 games or something. And so he gave me a little chance. Then I got injured. And then I got to tell you a story. So then my dad got cancer. They gave him 3 to 6 months. And I was injured in Pittsburgh. And I just thought, you know, my career is winding down and my mom could use a little support with, you know, so I went back to spend the rest of the season. You know, there was probably 2 months left in the season. I went back. My dad ended up passing. He had pancreatic cancer. He passed away in 3 months, almost to the day. And I remember I was given the eulogy, and it was like 3 or 4 days after the season had ended. And I looked out, and Herb Brooks was at the church, which was pretty cool. Yeah, it was really cool. They had lost out in the playoffs, and he was already back in Minnesota, and he made it a point to come to my dad's funeral. So that was pretty cool.
That is the thing about Herb. There's a lot of coaches like that. They can be jerks, and sometimes it's stuff they say to you, but deep down inside, they're good people. Yeah. Yeah. I've told this story many times, so Tom's going to give me a hard time here. But when I had Herb my second year in New York, and this is his first year coaching in the NHL, and he has this big meeting, you know, the day before our first game, and he's saying, you know, Barry Beck, here's your job. Ron Breschner, here's your job. Similarly to you, he goes to me at the end of the thing. He goes, Laidlaw, if you get the puck, give it to somebody else. You're not supposed to have it. And the guy's been dying laughing too. And I had a pretty good rookie year. I had like 6 goals, 23 assists. So I'm thinking I'm going to be this 2-way defenseman and everything. And Herb says that to me. And I was like,
yeah. If I can tell this story, because I tell it, it's one of my best stories. It's kind of one of my go-tos, and I'm not trying to one-up you. And I'm going to say it exactly how it got said to me. And there's an F word in it. So if you have to blank it out or whatever. But so in Montreal, I'm all excited because LA's coming to town. This would have been in 90, probably 90, my first year, 89, 90. I don't know. You might even battle the team.
Yeah, I was there. Yeah.
So you guys are coming to town, and I'm thinking this is going to, I get to play against Gretzky, right? Like this is something I've kind of probably dreamed about as a kid. And I'm all excited, and it's day of, and we're going through the morning skate, and I can remember just thinking like, you know, I wasn't like completely in awe, but I was like, it's going to be cool. I'm going to step on the ice with Gretzky tonight and stuff. So Burnsy waves me over and he goes, so obviously tonight playing against Gretz, we got to be on our game. We got to be really aware when he comes on the ice and we've got a game plan. And I'm already like, I already know that he doesn't love me. And so I'm all eyes. I'm looking at him. I'm nodding. He goes, so here's the thing. He goes, when Gretz gets on the ice, you get the fuck off.
Oh, that's good. It's great for your confidence, isn't it, when the coach says something?
Oh, yeah. Well, then, of course, at some point, you know, we're in our zone and you know, back-checking, get into the zone, and they change, and all of a sudden, here comes 99, and now all of a sudden, he's in the zone, and they're cycling the puck, and I'm like, oh, shit, I got to get off, because he's going to kill me if they score. So all I can think about is, I got to get off the ice, because Burnsy will, I'll never play again, so. Sure. You know how that goes. You're out there freaking out.
Yeah. Especially in the puck's in your end, too, because you can't
leave. Yeah. Well, it's bad enough. Yeah, it's bad enough when you're a rookie and the puck's in your own end and you don't want to be a minus. But now you got Gretzky buzzing around with Curry. And
it's probably hockey night in Canada, too, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Tom, you got to play with Jágr a little bit at the end of your career. How was that?
Oh, it was – I was playing with another guy named Steve Leach. We were both kind of at the end of our – you know, careers. We were sitting on the bench a lot. So we called it fantasy camp. We got to cheer him on. You know, we were like two old guys that got to put on the sweater and sit on the bench with Jágr and, you know, but he's a super nice guy. I think he was going through a phase where he was upset and disappointed because all the guys that he had been surrounded by weren't there anymore. Right. Like Lemieux wasn't playing. Taka wasn't there. Stevens wasn't there. Francis wasn't there. And so he kind of missed, he missed those days, I think. So he was a little disgruntled, but I will say it was amazing. He was the highest paid player, I think, at the time. And we used to just marvel at the fact that every 2 weeks you got a paycheck for $550,000. You know, we're down here, you know, making a lot less, you know, maybe a few hundred thousand. And his checks are twice as much as my annual salary. But he was a good guy. My wife always says, you know, remember he sent every one of us a Christmas, personally signed Christmas card. And, you know, like he did that. But he was it's funny, in the training room, he'd have the stock ticker, like CNBC on or whatever. He'd be watching the stock market because he had all kinds of money invested in stocks. And he wanted to see how much he was up, how much, you know. And one time in Phoenix, remember, he played with like Straka and Roosevelt and Robert Lang. We had these Czech guys. And after the game in Phoenix, I don't remember if we won or lost, but those guys were just gearing down and in the shower. And we're like, what are you guys doing? They're like, oh, we're going to Vegas. Jágr's got us a plane to Vegas. Right. And because we were staying overnight and we were going to fly out in the morning to go to LA or wherever we were, maybe going home. But I think we were on the road. So we were going up to Vancouver or something. But those guys jumped on, like, you know, one of the casinos sent a jet for him and they jumped on a plane, went to Vegas all night. And then they came back in the morning and had a morning skate and got on. And then they slept all afternoon or whatever.
Did you see the video of him recently? He's getting his number inducted. He's got a young girlfriend there.
And he says, hilarious.
The crowd. Yeah. What did he say again? What was that?
He starts to say, you know, my time in Pittsburgh, whatever, is my girlfriend's way too young to know I even played there or something.
And the crowd went crazy, too. I think it kind of built because they couldn't even believe he said it. And then after a while, the crowd gets louder and louder laughing.
I don't even know how – I don't know how young she is, but it's funny, right? He's like, my girlfriend's so young. She didn't even know it. You know, he's had this huge, great Hall of Fame career in Pittsburgh. Yeah. And he's joking that his girlfriend has no idea.
And the way he said it, too, is classic stuff. Yeah, she looked like she was maybe like 25, 30 at tops or something.
Yeah, what a beast he was. Like, he would, you know, if you ever hear, sometimes he talks about his training and he would do these body squats, just his body weight. But in all his free time at the rink, you could see him doing it. He just made it a point whenever he had some free time, he would do these body squats and he would move his feet from different widths. And then another thing he did, he had a stick and he cut off the blade and he would go out in the outside the locker room, like in the, you know, behind locker rooms, it's all concrete back in those arenas and stuff, or wherever he could find a concrete. And he'd put the end of the shaft of the stick into the plate, like a 10-pound plate. Oh, yeah. And he would stick handle it and move it around and all around and back. And his wrists and hands were so strong from just doing stuff like that. And his legs from doing these squats, he'd do thousands of squats by the end of the day and do these things with his wrists and his hands. And, you know, that's why he was so strong and so effective. Yeah.
So, Tom, what are you doing now after game? What did you get into?
You know, originally I was in, I kind of went into sales, business development for some B2B services, just call it that. I've worked at some startups. I've had all kinds of kind of sales roles. At the same time, for about 10 years, I did TV for the Minnesota Wild.
Oh.
And I did the pregame and postgame show for the Wild with Fox Sports North. And I did some Gopher TV during the first 5 years, too, before they switched over to the Big Ten Network. More recently, I've joined a nonprofit called United Heroes League. We used to be called Defending the Blue Line. And we support military families, primarily their kids playing hockey. But we do other sports too, but fundraise and both financially, you know, through donations and gifts. And we've got some events and some hard assets now that are sponsorable. And so I'm raising, you know, fundraising that way and doing some sponsorships for the organization. And we turn around and we can send sets of equipment to military connected kids that want to get on the ice and play hockey. If their parents are deployed, you know, times are tough, or they come back and, you know, they've either been injured, wounded physically or psychologically. And we want to kind of give these kids some form of, you know, sports. It normalizes their life and keeps them connected to their peers or to kids or school classmates. And so that's been really rewarding, and we're growing that. We received a really big gift, and we built an outdoor rink, refrigerated, but we have to leave it uncovered because we were just announced that we're going to be the recipient of this Hockey Day Minnesota. It's almost a week-long festival now where the final day is on Saturday. They put it on TV, and we have games outside that are televised on the regional sports, the same channel that the Wild are on. So they got youth games, high school games, college games, pro games, and you build like a little village around the rink. So there's bonfires, and there's a Friday and Saturday night, there's big beer tent with music, and it's a pretty cool festival. So we're working towards that in the next 2 years. But yeah, and I'm also helping kids kind of find their way to junior hockey and college hockey with some guidance. I'm not a family advisor per se, which is a whole nother industry, but I'm working with a hockey development company, and we're kind of building out a little bit more effective ways of educating and guiding kids and parents through that process.
How can people get a hold of you? You got a website?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm on social media a little bit on Twitter as Hockey Logic. The hockey company I'm working for is called MAP, M-A-P, MAP Hockey. And probably the more important organization is United Heroes League. If anyone wanted to support these military family kids, that would be great.
Perfect. United Heroes, is that what it's called again?
United Heroes League. Yep.
I'm going to after we get done here, I'll get in touch with you. So there's a couple other organizations that I work with that are doing similar things. So I'll hook you up, see if there's some synergy there. That's great giving back, right? I mean, I'm sure a lot of people helped you when you were coming up, and now you have the opportunity to give back to others. So that's very cool. Yep.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, we, you know, not just the hockey community, because like we've got this, we call them pro ambassadors. We got tens, you know, 30, 40, NHL players that are happy to jump on board, come in. You know, we've got a summer golf event here in Minnesota I think we get two foursomes on every hole. I mean, it oversubscribes, and each group gets a NHL player pretty much with them. And if it's not an NHL player, it's easy to get NFL guys, MLB guys. So it's well supported by all the pro athletes. They're happy to get behind, you know, supporting military kids playing sports.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, Tom, great to meet you. We really never have met before. And thank you very much for coming on the show. You've had a very interesting career and life so far. You're doing a lot of great stuff.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thank you for having me. I'm kind of watching you. I see your stuff pop up on my social media too. Cool. So good stuff. Tom, thanks for the invitation.
All right, guys.
Nice. Both Toms.
Thanks for coming on. Thomas, that was a great show. It was the Tom Show today. We had three Toms on today.
Tom Chorsky. So, see, I love doing those shows where I never met the guy before, so we learn about him.
Yeah, and it's great that you don't do any research, because then it's fresh, and you can just learn as we go. It's your journey of discovery. I'll do the research and tease some up for you, and then you can go from there. And you learned quite a bit today, as I saw.
Yeah, Good guy. Yeah.
He's very Is there somebody in the studio? Because I hear a voice. The battery. No. I see you looking away. What's going on there?
I'm looking around. There's nobody in the studio.
Oh, really? Because you keep looking to your left, I guess.
So,
someone in my chair today?
No. Nobody's in the chair.
Okay.
No, there's nobody here.
Okay. There he goes.
Just I'm looking around and see, make sure there's nobody there.
Well, please tell that young lady to come say hello.
She's not here.
Okay.
She's on the phone with me watching our show.
Okay, so Jonathan Jones, I think we have some tea for you here, John. I don't know. Tom's not giving anything up, though.
No, we don't do that. It's like Charlie Simmer. They're looking Charlie.
Well, not to get on track.
Thing?
Tom Chorsky was excellent. Stanley Cup winner. Part of the greatest series in New York. I mean, no offense to your Ranger teams, but that series was incredible.
Yeah, I didn't realize he was with the Devils at that point. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He won a cup, too. I never won a cup.
He was truly a speedster, right? He could fly.
What I admired, too, because he was brought in, like, I thought he was going to be his big goal scorer, but he really evolved into more of a checking guy. So,
yeah, well, you thought you were going to be a big goal scorer and devolved into a stay-at-home defenseman, right?
If it wasn't for Herb Brooks, I would have been a big goal scorer. Can you imagine if Herb didn't come along? I had 6 goals my first year. I probably would have got 10 my second, right?
You'd think you're Brian Leetch at that point. I mean, they wouldn't have to draft Brian Leetch because they had you.
Exactly.
You were scoring those goals. But your number would be retired.
Yeah.
And spelled
it still is. The number is retired. It's just the wrong name.
True, but they spelled the name wrong. Yeah, and then it's going to get retired. It's going to get retired again. There's a lot of groundswell for it to get retired again. Not for you, unfortunately, but for Brad Park. But
is there one thing?
Yeah, people are talking about. Yeah, Larry Brooks has been writing about it. Like, and he probably deserves it. I mean, he was a great player.
Yeah, but you know, I think what happens with that is that it's so far removed. There's none of the people that were at the Garden at that point are at the Garden now, right? So
they did Harry Howell and they did Bathgate and they did Vic Hadfield and those guys had him for John Rochelle as well.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Perk should be, right? I mean, but how long did he play with the Rangers?
He played quite a bit. He kept coming in second place in the Norris to Bobby Orr, which is
spot. Yeah.
But think about it. Let's just talk about this real quick. So current Rangers, the next one, they retired Lundqvist's number. Was it last year or 2 years ago? Yeah. So who's going to get retired from this current team? What do you think?
Whoa, man, that's a good old Kreider's got to get his number retired. So
I agree 100%. Yeah. Absolutely.
If they were to win a cup too, I think, definitely.
But even if he's about to score his 300th goal with the Rangers, he'll probably pass Roz Joubert for the all-time leading goal scorer before it's tied up. So he should be retired. And he'll be a Ranger for 15 years.
And really a classy guy, too, right? Really handles himself well in public and all that. So, man, that's a good question. Would Trouba get up there? I guess he's got...
No, I don't think so. Right? I don't think so. But Mika might. Panarin might.
Fox, if he...
Fox might. Shesterkin may as well. You know, who knows?
Yeah.
And, you know, as a Ranger fan, you know what's good is that Lafreniere is starting to play really well.
And isn't Kako's probably a little bit better too, right? Scored some well.
Kako's thing is, I think he's going to be a really good third line winger. Yeah. He's just not going to be a goal scorer. But those are important players.
But is he a good enough checker?
His defensive metrics are really good, and the record with him in the lineup is way better than with him with him out of the lineup.
Metrics.
I know. Look at that. I might get all nerdy as I'm a coach now. I'm an invigorated youth hockey coach.
When I played, we didn't know what a metric was, I don't think.
Yeah, well, some of that stuff. Hold on. I think your friend has something to say. Did your friend want to come on?
No. I'll turn down the volume.
Okay. Oh, wait. Are you FaceTiming someone?
I'm not FaceTiming. Oh, don't worry.
Wait. So we're in the studio.
No, nobody's in the studio.
You're out.
Somebody's listening to our show.
What the hell is going on?
Don't worry. You can turn down the volume.
We have a special guest sitting in on the show.
Yeah, you know how like some people come along and they shadow somebody so they can learn from them.
Yes,
so, you know, I do that.
So who's this person? Let's bring him on.
No,
or her?
No, she's shy.
Okay. Oh, okay. So Jonathan Jones, there you go. Tom has a female friend shadowing him today. Look at you on the hot seat. You said you were pink. You're getting a little red right now, Thomas.
No, it's the sun I got there. I was up in Vastel, New York. Vastel, it was in Vastel.
So, yeah, we got a little bit off track there, Tom, but Tom Chorsky was he was a great guest. It was a good show. People are going to love that one.
Really good. Yes, man. He's a cool dude, the stuff he's done. You know what I like, too, is that he started off his goal scorer. Didn't turn out that that's really what he was, but he adapted his game. I think coaches helped him, too, but became that really good defensive player, too. So I admire players when they do that. Yeah, good job.
Yeah, great episode.
All right, Grasshoppers, thank you for listening. We had a fantastic show. We'll see you next time.